Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In his work on fate, where Cicero is considering a fundamental metaphysical question about whether the human being has any degree of freedom or whether everything is determined by some sort of necessity or fate, one of the key thinkers that he's going to examine at considerable length is Chrysippus. And Chrysippus was the third scholark of the Stoic school, very important school at the time that Cicero was writing, one that's had a lot of influence down through history. And the Stoics had a very interesting perspective on this question of freedom and necessity. Unlike some others who would be willing to say that everything is totally determined, there's nothing you can do, nothing is up to you, you have no choices, so don't worry about any of that. That'd be the determinism or fatalism side. And unlike others who said, oh no, there's complete human freedom, you can escape the bounds of necessity, there may be some things that are necessitated, but nothing that really applies to human minds or choices or actions, the Stoics said, it's actually both. And so this is what in the discussion of free will and determinism, we call compatibilism. And Cicero, in what he's giving us of Chrysippus here, is articulating one of the many compatibilist positions that we find throughout the history of ideas. And so when you're a compatibilist, you're actually, in some respect, trying to proverbial have your cake and eat it too, which, by the way, you can do. You can actually have a cake and eat it too, right? There's no problem with that in most circumstances. But they're trying to have a determinism where everything is fated, or as Cicero is going to have Chrysippus talk about, following the conventions of his time, everything happens of necessity or fate in some respect. Every proposition about what occurs is either true or false, including ones about the future. He wants to have that. And at the same time, he wants to have some degree of freedom. Freedom of what? Freedom of the body? No, freedom of the human mind. And Cicero actually tells us that he regards Chrysippus as being in this kind of middle position. He says that Chrysippus stood as an unofficial umpire and wished to strike a compromise. As a matter of fact, he inclines to adhere to those who held that the mind is released from all necessity of motion, that is, the mind can determine itself. There are some things that are volitional, that are our own choice. But Cicero also points out, because of the formulas, because of the language that he used that's peculiar to himself, he slips into difficulties that against his will he lends support to the necessity of fate. So let's take a look now at what Cicero provides us of Chrysippus's doctrines here. We should mention, too, that we don't actually possess any writings by Chrysippus as such, but there are fragments and portions of his works, not only in Cicero, but in several other philosophers as well. So, as a Stoic, as somebody who believes that everything is material and that there is a kind of ruling logos running through things, Chrysippus argues that all motion, all change, everything that is the way it is, and everything that's going to be different, is caused by precedent or antecedent causes. That is, things that happen before it lead to things coming after it. And if you put all these together in some sort of causal nexus, then you can say that everything is happening by fate. And this is something that Chrysippus is committed to, and the Stoics in general are committed to. He goes a little bit further in saying that everything arises, and here he's using the word eternal in a somewhat different manner, perhaps, than later philosophers will do, meaning from eternity, causes that have always been and in some respect will always have an influence. So eternal causes governing future events. Everything unrolls in this succession where cause leads to effect, that effect leads to other causes, and so on and so on and so on. So we have a deterministic universe that we belong to, a determined universe, seemingly, in every single respect. Now, how do we get any freedom out of this? This is where we have to make some important distinctions, and that is precisely one of the things that Chrysippus did. That is a contribution to this idea or debate or understanding. And that's part of what Cicero is highlighting here. So there are some distinctions and some clarifications about the notion of cause. In the strictest sense, we should only use the word cause for what makes the effect come about, right? What produces the effect. And Cicero says that it's not just enough to precede, to be before the effect, it has to precede it effectively. The word there is efficienter, coming from the word to create or to bring about or to produce, facere, right? So the cause has to, in a certain respect, produce the effect. It's not enough that it contributes to it. It's not enough that it's just there doing something in the background. It has to really be central to this. A little bit later, Cicero is going to discuss what we could call necessary conditions. And this is particularly important as well. He says, they declare, and he means the Stoics, that there is a difference whether a thing that we're considering as a cause, is of such a kind that something cannot be affected without it. So what we're talking about there is something being a necessary condition for something else. So if we think about, he's not using this as an example, but if we think about an example of going out and fishing with worms and a hook, you don't necessarily have to have a rowboat, but you could be in a rowboat and you row out in the middle of the lake, or you could cast from the shore. The hook is the cause, in a certain respect, of the fish being caught, right? But if you throw the hook out by itself, unless you have a really stupid fish, it's not going to, or very hungry, right? If they're in a feeding frenzy, it's not going to bite a bear hook by itself. You need to put some bait on the hook. And you could come up with other things. We could create lures. We could go into all sorts of other examples with respect to fishing. But just imagine putting a worm on the hook in the old-fashioned manner of fishing, right? The worm is what the fish actually sees, gravitates towards, bites down on. The hook then penetrates into its mouth. And then you reel it in or perhaps pull it in if there's no reel on your fishing rod. Which of those is the cause? Well, you do need the worm, but the worm is just a necessary condition. The worm doesn't cause, in any very strict sense, the fish being caught. As a matter of fact, you could probably point at each of the things and say, you know, rod, line, hook, worm. Not all of those are just necessary conditions. None of them are actually the single cause. So he says, there's a difference between whether a thing is of such a kind that nothing cannot be affected without it, or such that something must necessarily be affected by it. Cause necessitates the effect, a cause in the strict sense. So perhaps the hook, you could say, is the cause of the fish being able to be reeled in a certain respect, because it's hooked through the flesh. The hook is the cause of the damage to the fish, right? And the worm is just a proximate cause in that example. So it's not just what's necessary conditions for effects. Cicero goes on and he says, none of the causes mentioned is really a cause because none by its own force affects the thing of which it is said to be the cause, nor is that which is a condition of a thing's being affected a cause, but that of which the access necessarily produces the thing of which it is the cause. And going back now to this notion of cause and the language that we're using, Chrysippus is willing to allow us to use the term provided we make an important distinction. It says some causes are perfect and principle, ruling, right? They actually do bring about the effect. Others just make some sort of contribution. They're part of the causal nexus, but they are not the single thing that determines it. He calls those auxiliary, that is helpful, you could say, and proximate. The auxiliaries in the Roman army were the people who weren't part of the legions, but fought on the side of it and, you know, helped out. They weren't to be relied upon as the main principal thing. So we can distinguish between these different kinds of causes. Where is the upshot for this? Well, we see this bearing its fruit when we look at this famous example of the cylinder or the top that Chrysippus used to try to explain the compatibilist position about the human mind. And it's very important to remember that this is an analogy. This is not an exact one-to-one correspondence. He's not saying we are a cylinder or we are a top. The human mind works differently, but there is a structural resemblance here. So what is the idea behind the cylinder or the top? You have a cylinder which is round, and it can roll down an incline, or you have a top, which is a cone, and you spin it, right? Or maybe you do it with your fingers. You set it spinning. Which of those is the cause? Is pushing the cylinder the cause of it rolling, or is it the nature of the cylinder itself? Chrysippus says that there's a very important difference here. You're just adding a motion to it. You are causing in a certain sense, but you're an auxiliary and proximate cause. You're not the principal cause for the cylinder rolling. The nature of the cylinder, the fact that it's round rather than square, is why it rolls and continues rolling. Similarly with the top, you start it spinning, but then it continues on its own motion, which you imparted to it. But it does that because of its nature. You can't say, spin a book. I mean, you can try. And maybe if you're super lucky, you find a surface on which you could actually spin this. But it's not of that nature. Now, the human mind, what about its desires, its appetites, and its assents? The Stoics want to claim that these are actually up to us or in our power. In potestate is how Cicero talks about it, which is very similar to the language that's used later on by people like Epictetus, epumen, up to us, in our control. So this is a consistent doctrine. The Stoics wanted to say that desire to some degree is within our power, assent even more so is. Yet, desire can be caused by outside things. You see the fruit, you're hungry, and you start to, you know, desire eating that fruit. You see a beautiful person of whatever gender you're attracted to, and you feel sexual desire towards them. Now, desire is one thing, and we feel it, right? And the Stoics also talked about aversion, which is the sort of corresponding thing away from desire. You know, you see something gross, maybe some garbage, and you're like, ugh, I don't want to touch that, right? Or you get something slimy on your hands, and you want to go and wash your hands. That's a desire. Assent is something further than that. That is where you, yourself, sort of take that on, ratify it, make it your own. And the Stoics thought, as many other philosophers do, it's possible to have a desire that comes to you without you actually choosing it. It's caused by something on the outside, although it's caused because of your human nature as well. And then you can choose whether to assent to it or not. Now, if everything was fated by necessity, it would seem that you actually don't have any choice about assent. Chrysippus says, no, you actually do have choice about assent, but it is also fated. There are causes for it, but you yourself, your human nature, the mind that you've created to some degree, right? Through your own working of yourself, through the choices you've made, the thoughts you've thought, the willings you've willed. That is the cause for whether you assent or not to this or that desire. So on the one hand, you are determined. There is a causal nexus, but you're part of that causal nexus, and you've determined part of what that causal nexus looks like. So you're also, in another respect, free. Not greatly free, of course, because you don't control really anything outside of the boundaries of your mind for the Stoics, but there is a certain sort of freedom there. And this is a compatibilist position on the issue of freedom and determinism. Some people may look at this and say, that really doesn't seem like freedom to me. So long as there is a causal nexus, you're just talking about us having a sort of extra role at the end of all these other causes. But the Stoics and Chrysippus really did think that to some degree this does, at least as far as the mind goes, lie within our power. So there is some freedom there, even though there is a nexus of causes, precisely because we ourselves are one of those causes. The nature that we have and make for ourselves become, in this case, a perfect and primary cause. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.